This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 650 with Mike Wieger, recorded on June 12th, 2025. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful, it's getting kind of warm. Mike, it's College World Series. I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that, those words together. Is it? Don't they hold some, I think,
some NCAA rights or something? We can say it. It's fine.
College World Series weekend, CWS starting in Omaha. It always gets hot. We've got severe weather, I'm sure, because we always get some severe weather. So it's getting warm, right? For sure.
And yeah, I think I looked at the forecast, and of course, I just knew it. Next week, CWS, and we have storms rolling through all Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
It's always how it works. Yeah.
It's like the weather waits for it. Like, we're like, hey, get everybody to town and then scare the bejesus out of them.
Yeah, because we've been warm. And then yesterday we hit the 90s. We're like, oh, okay, yep, College World Series is coming. So here it is.
It's always, you could clockwork. You could just kind of pick it out. Well, speaking of clockwork, we'll post a show with some world-class show notes out there at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to all of you who are on the Patreon team. And every month I kind of think, well, maybe this will be the month some folks drop off, and you don't. So thanks for doing that. If you want to join that Patreon team, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon, I got one $5 plan, 1 month or as long as you want, whatever you want to do. Thanks to everybody who does that each and every month. And then a big thanks to everyone using the affiliate link out there at theaverageguy.tv. Just go to the site, upper right-hand corner. There's a red sentence there about Amazon. Just click on it. It'll take you through. You can use the link. I tried to make it super easy. All the links have it in there as well, but I just tried to make it simple for you. So appreciate you guys using that. Big thanks to Kevin Schoonover. Joined me last week. We had a great talk about the fix-it space. You know, we talk about maker space, Mike. You know, that's a big deal. Kevin spent some time talking about the fix-it space, which I found kind of interesting, and maybe if we do have a major economic downturn of some kind, who knows what's going to happen here with everything that's going on. Maybe fixing and repairing things will become, I don't know. Do you find yourself thinking like, oh, I could probably fix that as opposed to, I'll just get another one?
Completely. I wish more things were repairable. The hard part nowadays is they're not made as repairable as they used to be, right? A lot more plastic, a lot of plastic clips that break when you try and take things apart, a lot of glue when it used to be bolts and those sort of things. So yeah, no, I'm definitely in the fix-it camp. If you can. The hard part is it's hard to do, especially on even cars these days, right? I opened up the hood to Hannah's vehicle and I'm like, I don't know if I want to work on this thing. There's just way too many electronics now versus even just my truck.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge in a lot of ways. However, my number four son, Timmy, he's a auto mechanic for Kia. So he's a master mechanic now and pretty good at it. And he'll come over for dinner on Sunday nights. And I'm like, so, you know, how was work? Oh, it's fine. What are you doing? Like, what are you working on? Mostly engine replacements. And I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, he does a lot of the warranty. Like if the engine goes, he does all the warranty work. And I go, isn't that complicated? I mean, as a kid, I was thinking, you know, I watched my brother change an engine in our 74 Plymouth wagon. And he must have worked on that thing. And cars apparently, or supposed they were supposedly easier in those days. I watched him struggle with that thing for a couple weeks trying to get it done. And Tim was like, nah. Yeah, he's like, is it hard? He's like, nah. You know, he goes, after you've done it a couple times, it's this and that. It's knowing, Mike. It's like anything, right?
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure working for the factory too, he knows he has parts that are compatible, right? You're not trying to buy from third parties and piecemeal stuff together, aftermarket parts with stuff. So, but the experience probably, like he said, the more he does it and just, he's got it down to a science.
Yeah, I think so. He's done enough.
Has he always been mechanically inclined like that?
I didn't know. No, as a teenager, showed none of that. And then, you know, one day he decided to join the Marines, and he was in the Marines for 5 years and was a helicopter maintenance guy. And, you know, which I think he says a helicopter is 5,000 spinning parts, all spinning around an oil leak. Something like that. He's like, yeah, Dad, it's amazing those things even fly. Like, it's, they shouldn't, you know, there's some physics to it and they do, but he's kind of like, they just shouldn't work. There's so many things, so many things wrong with them. But he learned that there and then took it. And then they had a program, Kia had a program that took veterans and did some training with them. And so he learned there. They sent him to school for their electrical stuff too, for their e-vehicles.
Okay.
So he's all in it. It seems like he's having a good time. So
you know, nice.
If I ever need something fixed on my car, you know who I'm calling.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
No
for kidding. Sure. For sure. Well, good to catch up with you. For those of you joining on the podcast, I spent a little time in the pre-show catching up with Mike. That's available on our live channel. So if you head over to YouTube and search, this is Home Gadget Geeks Live. Nope, theaverageguy.tv live. That's what it is. I have a live channel at work too. And I almost said, yeah, it's Gallup Webcasts. And
I'm like, yeah. Nope,
that's the wrong one. I think it's The Average Guy Live or something like that. Email me, Jim at theaverageguy.tv if you can't find it. But you'll want to head over and catch the pre-show. That's available on our YouTube channel or our Patreon subscribers. You just get it. So it's there and available. We caught up with Mike a little bit. Mike, let's catch up on some technical stuff with you. You're, of course, for a long time, Cox Communications was the internet mafia, as we used to say here in Omaha. The only ones, you'll take what we give you. Their network was not the best. In fact, in some cases, like an old neighborhood like mine, it was maybe held together with baling wire and to duct tape. I am not joking. And they'd be like, well, you get what you get sometimes. You know, they're engineers. Lately, there's been some new options that have come to town. And I think we're finding in a lot of markets that's the case, whether that's Google Fiber. I'm on T-Mobile now. I'm doing completely wireless on T-Mobile for my internet. You want a different option. Talk a little bit about the direction you went.
Yeah, I did. So my neighborhood, a different part of town from Jim, Cox is literally the only option. CenturyLink is here, but literally with like DSL level speeds, like insanely slow. So if you want anything close to gigabit, you go Cox. So I have the fastest plan, the most money I can pay Cox is what I do. So I pay extra for unlimited data and I have 1 gigabit down, but I only have 100 megabit up. So that upload speed is really where I run into a lot of my issues. But I've kind of been captive, right? There's been no other offerings in our neighborhood. But what we've seen around our neighborhood is we have a fight with the fiber companies. So all the fiber companies, you can literally see them converging and almost racing to install their fiber. And they're all taking over certain cities. So there's two major ones in Omaha. Great Plains is one, and MetroNet is the other. And literally half my neighborhood, Great Plains is on that side, and MetroNet starting on this side. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if they're going to meet in the middle, if they're going to eventually overlap each other, and we're going to have two options for fiber. But I'm just excited because so MetroNet is going to be the one that is for my house. And they sent out the pre-order option. They're literally in the neighborhood laying conduit and everything. I called their customer service, and it sounds like sometime in the fall they'll actually be live with the fiber. You know, it takes a long time for all the construction. But I'm kind of preparing. So with MetroNet, they have all different plans, but I went with their almost highest plan. It's not even their highest. I went with the 2 gigabit plan. So that is 2 gigabit down, 2 gigabit up for $70 a month with unlimited data, which is just... it's wild to me that I'm going to, you know, $100 cheaper a month for speeds that are 20 times faster on the upload and 2 times faster on the download. It's kind of wild that these companies were able to come in and do it for that cheap. Now, to be fair, that is a 3-year, right, introductory price. It did say it's going to go up to $119. That's the full price for this plan. But even that, I'm like, okay, that's still $50 cheaper than what I was paying for. And we'll see. What I'm hoping, if you do a lot of Googling on MetroNet, it's 99% good. But when it's bad, it's bad. Like when they have outages, they're out for like 2 days. And they're known to have some. But as you kind of stated with Cox, I'm already kind of used to that. So it's even that is not going to be too big of a risk factor for me. Did you have fiber options when you were looking at your T-Mobile setup?
No, Bellevue, and I'm deep in Bellevue. So it's, you know, back behind the old high school, and they've been talking about, they were starting to run fiber out here and then it just stopped. Like a year ago, they came out and spray painted all the sidewalks and mark stuff. And they're like, we're coming. And then just
nothing.
Crickets. And, you know, I have T-Mobile, wireless. I have a tower right up the street on the top of the hill. So a block away, maybe two at most. And I get, 400 down and 75 up for $50 a month, which,
oh yeah,
been super reliable. It's not
unlimited data.
Unlimited. Yeah. That's really the best part. Right.
Right.
And I'm not doing much anymore, where I needed that kind of bandwidth anyway. So for me, that worked, for 70, I probably would make the switch to fiber if that was coming. Do you know, well, so with the fiber rollout, will those companies share those fiber lines that they
see? That's what
do you know?
I don't know, because it's interesting because the two different companies are doing the installs of the conduit. So I don't know if they're going to have those type of agreements or how that's going to work. I would imagine not. But maybe they will. I don't know. I'll check. I have seen on the Reddit forums that some guys say, once you have like an ONT from each, they literally just, as their offers expire, they'll jump to the other fiber provider and then jump back and then jump back. And so they'll just switch back and forth.
Yeah.
So it seems like you can get both offerings. I don't know what's going to happen in our neighborhood.
It's funny that it's 2025 and we're still talking about how to get the best internet. That must be a conversation we're going to have the rest of our lives, right?
Yeah.
Certainly gigabit was a giant deal when it was available, right?
Huge.
And today you're getting two on a medium plan, which probably means five is available, do you think, on their
yeah, super so plan? Five is the fastest plan. Yeah. You can do 5 gigabit, which I did consider for a little bit. I'm like, no, I don't need 5 gigabit down.
But you do, Mike. I mean, think of the golf simulator. Like,
I know.
Think
I
how
know.
Fast that golf simulator would be right? On 5 gigabit. Bust out in the chat said AT&T showed up and offered gigabit symmetrical for $80 a month in our neighborhood. And I thought Comcast would lower their prices and they raised them instead, which, you know, who knows what's going on oftentimes with these providers and figuring out what they're doing with pricing. Sometimes when you think for a lot of years here in Omaha, if you just called Cox and said, I'm leaving, they'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll give you a sweet deal. It'll be for 6 months. And you could literally call back every 6 months and get them to extend the deal. Right.
Not the case anymore.
No. Then at one point they must've got smart to it, or the stockholder said, you can't do that anymore. And that kind of stopped.
And you know what's funny? It's almost like they have different divisions that need to, you know, account for different budgets, because Cox has fiber in Omaha, not in my neighborhood, but they do. So my buddy lives in a different part of Omaha, has fiber in Cox. So it's symmetrical gigabit and he pays like the $80, but Cox for their slower plans that I'm paying for, they don't offer, they're still at the much higher price. So even within the one company, it doesn't make any sense. It's interesting.
I had an engineer out. We were having a lot of trouble right before I switched to T-Mobile. We had an engineer out. I called and then I called back and then I called again and they kept escalating the request. And so one Saturday, this engineer showed up at my door. He's like, I hear you're having internet problems. And I'm like, so I told him the story and he's like, yeah, I was down at your substation. That's not what they call it, but whatever. He goes, it's kind of a cobbled mess. He's like, we've got things going, you know, you can tell he's not used to dealing, or he doesn't care that he's dealing with customers. He's not telling me.
He's gonna tell you how it is.
He's telling me exactly the way things are, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, this is there, and there's a trunk line, and we got this going down. He goes, I could probably, and it's not the right word, but he's like, I could flash the whole system and we could, you know, get you back to where you should be, but that's gonna take everybody in the neighborhood down for a certain, you know. He's like, I don't really want to do that. And he's like, ah, screw it. I'm going to do it. So he goes and does it. Takes the neighborhood down for, it was probably down for 5 minutes. Like, it wasn't a big outage, right? And it was good for a while. And then I felt bad when T-Mobile came. You know, a couple months later, we started getting T-Mobile ads. And I'm like, could this really work? And could pure wireless really work? That's kind of the, you know, can 5G wireless work? And actually, for my application and for what I do, and even for getting internet out to the shed, works pretty well. Being that I'm close, right? It helps that I'm close.
Yeah. Well, because the location is totally where it determines if 5G is going to work for me. At my place, even on Verizon, and I had my buddy come over with a T-Mobile phone because I was considering that too. And it's just we're on the edge of ultra wideband, but we don't get it very strong. And so it drops to like 45-ish.
Well, Omaha's weird that way. Pockets that you and probably every city is this way, to be honest. Pockets where you think, oh, yeah, that'd be covered. You know, and then you get there and it's a ghost, you know, it's ghost areas for any of the wireless stuff.
You're like, yeah,
how could we not have a strong signal for any of the carriers? Well, it all kind of depends where they've put up the poles, you know, and how those are covered and who leased those and some of those kinds of things. Will you make any big changes? So when you're on fiber from a Home Labs standpoint.
Yeah.
Are you going to make any big changes when you get it?
Yeah, that was part of the fun. So I pre-ordered, and when I pre-ordered, I honestly thought they were going to be like ready in a month. So I was like, oh shoot, I got to get ready, because it makes zero sense to have 2 gigabit speeds if you have all gigabit gear, right? Because you're never going to take advantage of it. So long story short, I found out they're not coming to the fall, so I had some time, but I've already kind of gone in and prepped the server room for the upgrades. And so a few things I was thinking through was, you know, I've never gone to 10 gig. I still have all my servers and everything is just gigabit across the board. And as I was looking at the prices of 10 gigabit gear, and especially for managed 10 gigabit gear, because I do run VLANs, I was looking at PoE because I run some PoE devices. When I was kind of doing the math, and since I'm not doing any video editing anymore, so I'm not doing a lot of file transfer to the server, I kind of determined that actually 2.5 gig networking was kind of going to be the sweet spot for me, especially when it came to price. And I was surprised. Price on 2.5 gigabit gear has really come down. So I did put one link in the notes. I found a really affordable managed 2.5 gigabit switch. So it's got 8 ports of 2.5. It's all managed. And then it's got one 10 gig SFP port. And when you're getting into 2.5, you can start to go all SFP. You can go RJ45 and some SFP. Just because most of my rack was already RJ45, I went mainly RJ45. So I found this 8-port switch and put it in the rack, got it all set up. And then really, I mean, looking at the different options for NICs, TP-Link, I mean, I think their 2.5 gig NIC is about $27 on Amazon. So I had 3 servers and then the Golf Sim computer that I was like, okay, there's 4 NICs there to upgrade those to 2.5 and ran it that way. And that was kind of the first upgrade. And what's nice about that upgrade is even though I don't have Metronet yet, I'm actually seeing the benefit of all my backups between my servers going 2.5 times the speed they were before. Loading things is a lot better. Where I notice it too is if we have a lot of activity on the server, like watching from Jellyfin, and we're loading it locally. And so our local bandwidth, we have up to 2.5 gigabits. So we can be pulling a lot of files all at once, which works really well. So yeah, went in and did that upgrade. So I would encourage people when you're thinking about that, 10 gig is definitely the best option, but do you really need that speed? I was talking to a buddy too, and he had gotten the high plan from Metronet, but he was wondering why he didn't get the full speed. And I was kind of asking him about his setup, and he was just describing the switches he had. And so kind of talking through that your network gear can be your bottleneck, just because you get the 2.5 gig or the 2 gig internet plan, you have to have beyond gigabit gear to take advantage of it. So thinking through for me, all the different bottlenecks I had in my network. And then the final piece I needed to do was, so my PF Sense box, I still run PF Sense as my router. It's a Dell R210. So it's kind of the Dell server style. I went in and I got an Intel dual 10 gigabit NIC for the PF Sense box. So I put that in, it's SFP. So I have, right now in there, I have 2 SFP to RJ for it. No, sorry. I have 1 SFP to RJ45 that just runs to Cox. And then the other one, I actually ran a little fiber cable. Fiber's gotten really cheap too. The cable is like $6. So a fiber optic cable from the PF Sense box to that 2.5 gigabit switch, because the 2.5 gigabit switch has a 10 gigabit SFP port. So the switch and the router are connected at full 10 gigabit. But then everything down chain from there is 2.5 gig. And so what that means is that card in the PF Sense box makes me ready as soon as MetroNet is here, whether they run fiber or Ethernet, which I'm 99% sure it's Ethernet, that SFP port allows for either. So we're kind of ready. We're kind of prepped. We got the switch in there. We're ready for 2.5, and then we have the 10 gig NIC in the router. That is one reason, Jim, I've always loved, you know, build your own router style, because instead of going out and spending an extra now $400 on a new router that can do the new speeds, it's as simple as a $30 network card going into the PF Sense box. So that's why I've always enjoyed the PF Sense. It just makes upgrades so much easier. And I was doing some iPerf speed tests trying to soak up the 2.5, and the CPU on that LR210 is still like minimal, maybe into 15% when I'm saturating the 2.5 gig NIC on there.
Do you, you know, so I'm thinking about my setup, and I've got an older 1 gig giant switch, 24 port switch that's everything's coming into. So I didn't need to replace that. Although, you know, this is one of those areas where I could probably get away with less now than I used to have all kinds of stuff going in there. We've decommissioned some equipment, brought it down. So, you know, maybe for a guy like me, maybe thinking, now I don't need it because my internet is not keeping up with that, right? One gig for me, but you know, we move some files around from time to time. As I listen to you, I would think if that switch went out, then it's time to go 2.5, right? That's what I hear you saying. Would you agree with that?
I do. I think if you're doing any sort of file transfer on the network, if every single user of your home is truly just connecting from their device to the internet, and your internet speed isn't above a gig, really probably no need for it. But if you do any sort of file transfer, it is kind of nice having that higher speed. And I will say just one lesson learned. I know we all know this lesson, but we never do it. Label cables. I have never once labeled cables in my server room. And I have Ethernet runs that are coming in from all over the house. One of my main runs actually runs out of the server room up a piece of PVC. So my server room's in the basement, up a PVC pipe that's shoved in the corner of my kid's bedroom on the main level and up to the attic. And then it spreads out from there and goes to access points and security cameras and goes to everything. Well, what I didn't know when the contractor came to do the basement is I was leaving one day and he's walking in. He's like, "Hey, by the way, come downstairs real quick." I said, "Okay." He's like, "Okay, all these cables." He goes, I need those out of the way. We gotta do work up here, and we're gonna be cutting this and doing that." And I was like, "Well, that's like almost all my networking. Like that'll take down a lot of stuff." And Hannah's working from home this summer, so in the matter of, he's like, "I need a den like now." So within the matter of an hour, I had to go figure out where these cables were coming from. And literally, it was, I would unplug it and be like, "Well, what just turned off? I have no idea." Security cameras, did the Wi-Fi go down? So label your cables, because you never know when you're going to have 45 minutes to dissect your entire network. I make it complicated because I have VLANs. So I can't just unplug it from one port and plug it into another, because that VLAN, that port's on a different VLAN. So it was a very stressful 45 minutes. And just so we're clear, I didn't learn my lesson. They're still not labeled. I didn't you think that while you're in that process, you're going to label them. You're like, "This is the last time I'm going to have that problem." No, there's still not a single label on them, but I definitely felt the pain of my spaghetti of cables and not knowing where anything goes.
Yeah. The other advice I'd have is on power cords, of actually labeling the end of the power cord too. You know, we went through a project this winter, setting up a generator inlet, got the, you know, wired that in. I've got a disconnect switch on the breaker so I can, you know, I do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm labeling all these, you know, you label all this stuff so you know where it goes and how it works and all that stuff. But then I'm doing some work behind, you know, and I got power cords coming into surge protectors or whatever. And you want to pull that cord, like it's going somewhere in a massive cable. You're like, "Which one do I pull?" You know, you're tugging it and trying to look down there. Come on.
Yeah. On that move. Yeah.
A little bit of blue tape or whatever, however you want to do it. Some folks like to, you know.
You're kind of feeling your hand up on the top one, which cord's moving. And it's never the right one because they're tangled, right? Which you don't really.
Yeah. I think it's this one. And then it's not. You're right. Because she feels it, but it's wrapped around another one. Somehow when you are sleeping, all those cords wrap around each other.
Oh yeah.
I don't, right?
Cord fairy. Really? They go and have a party and they all get tangled up. Yeah, for sure. Well, quick funny follow-up story, because we've talked about those generator plugs, and I think I was on the show talking about mine.
Yeah, yeah.
So as part of the basement finish, our panels in the basement, and long story short, there was old water damage that we didn't know from before we even moved in. And so we ended up deciding we're going to replace the whole panel. We'll go to 200 amp service while we're at it, because we were only at 50. A lot of benefits from it. But his first, so I come down, I'm like, hey, how's it going? He's like, good, good. And he's like, so who put in that generator plug? And I was like, that'd be this guy right here. And I was like, and he goes, no. He goes, it's fine. And I was like, okay, be honest. I was like, because by this point, him and I had talked, like, he kind of knew I liked this stuff, but I knew nothing about it. I was like the dumb guy that he liked to teach stuff to. And I was like, so how bad is it? How bad did I do? He's like, no, like functionally it works. It does work. And for the most part, it's up to code. He goes, but you followed OPPD's line in from the outside. OPPD, for the listeners, is our power provider here in Omaha. And he goes, if you ever had an issue, OPPD will not even touch anything because you've been in their pipe. They have to be the only people in their pipe. And so I didn't really think about that when I was putting it in. And what I thought was, perfect. There's a pipe that goes right into my panel. I can just follow that down. It's already here for me. So lesson learned, it was 99% code compliant, but I was going to have a major issue if I ever had a power outage and needed OPPD to come out. So he fixed that for me.
Which was, remember, friends, in most cases, they own the meter. So like, you know, there's a lot.
And there's apparently they own that whole pipe from the meter into your panel, and they do not want any other wires in there. For liability standpoint, they want to know that they've been the only ones in there.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's why they put
that. It makes total sense.
That's why they put those little, seals on there that you just rip off that you're not supposed.
Yep, like putty in there so you don't touch it. And I pull that out to get in there. Yeah. All that.
They had the putty to what that blocks the cup serves a couple purposes. That it blocks the in the winter time, so those pipes will get if the cold air is coming in through those pipes, it'll create condensation in your box.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I forget they have a name for that.
Smart. Party. Okay.
But they you have to block it up. Listen, every jurisdiction is different. Every electrician, it's all different, but that's why they put in cold weather, spots, they put it in to keep the cold air from shooting down that pipe and then just rusting out your electrical panel with condensation, right? Comes in, hits a warm panel, cold air, warm panel. Mine's completely separate. I drilled through the block and got it done. Couple questions coming in from the chat. Bust out, by the way, welcome Bust out. Good to have you out here. Could you consider Ubiquity at all?
I would love. I mean, that is the dream, right? To have a whole Ubiquity rack. I use Ubiquity access points. So I just upgraded to the U7 Pro for the access point, which has been fantastic. The gear it gets a little pricey. And trying to do the basement remodel while also redoing the rack, the cost there, I was like, let me just start with this. But yes, Ubiquity, I think, is, especially for the home lab environment, like the best. That's going to be amazing. If I had already gone with a Ubiquity router, I probably would have bit the bullet and paid for the Ubiquity switch. But I already don't live fully in the Unify ecosystem, right, with the app. I have their access point. Actually, I just have their access point. That's all I have from them. But if I use their router, I probably would have been more inclined to. But using pfSense, I would have had to switch that out too. So that's where the cost to me was. I was going to need the switch and the router. And so, yeah, but Ubiquity is fantastic.
Ken says you'd mentioned Jellyfin. So are you all Jellyfin now? You doing any Plex?
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that. I was kind of tired of Plex's shenanigans. If you guys have kind of been keeping up on the news, Plex is just they're really in this identity crisis mode where they're obviously trying to, sell and have a value to a company. That mainly is for people who have servers of movies that you don't know where they come from, right? Like just to kind of put it out there, that's what they have. And so they've been doing a lot of weird stuff with their Plex Pass pricing, and they had a new notification to the users. You can opt out of it, but they want to start collecting all the data on what you're watching and sell that information. So it was just one of those, I made the switch. It was less work than I thought. Because I do have friends and family that use the server, so getting them all switched over to Jellyfin from Plex took about a few weeks of just answering a lot of text messages and things like that. But yeah, we are now, their Plex is not running on my rack. I am pure Jellyfin from here on out, and it's been great. I actually really enjoy Jellyfin. It's been a good switch.
It reminds me, I should probably have John from Channels back on. I've still maintained my Channels subscription, $8 a month, I think, is what I pay for them. And they're never going to have a lifetime plan. Everybody asks that all the time. You can have a life, and they're never going to have, not as long as John's in charge. It just keeps working. That has been the best. Like I have not had any, we talk about the wife acceptance factor. It's been working for a long time now, and it just keeps doing its thing. So Channels is good.
And you know what? I see that I've always wanted lifetime options too, but there is a benefit to them never offering it. I honestly think Plex got into the trouble they're in now because they offered lifetime for so long and all of us essentially had it. Like every user who had a Plex pass had the lifetime. Well, that means that revenue is not going to keep coming in, right? They're not getting a lot of revenue, and to keep developing the product, you need some form of recurring revenue, or you need to go the open source, not trying to make money off it type, and just have it be a community project. And I think that's where Plex got in trouble is, shoot, all of our power users have had lifetime passes for the last 6 years, and we're not making a dime off them. So how do they make more money? And I think that was part of it. So I actually don't mind the companies not offering a lifetime plan if it's affordable. And if they don't change up, what drives me nuts is when there's something that they said was always going to be free and then they put a paywall in front of it. Like, come up with another additional benefit to your product and make me pay for that. I'm happy to pay for additional product or additional like services and features, but not ones that you said were always going to be free and then you put them behind a paywall.
I totally agree. Yeah. I can't agree more with you on that. Bust out. I was talking about Ubiquiti, about double the price, right? 8 ports, 160. You're at 80 for this port. So about double the price. And then a 5 port, which you really can't get away with, but if you needed an endpoint, or if you were going to push, sometimes I'll push a single line to a spot and then port it out from there.
Yeah.
Or just a basic, it becomes a splitter at that point, right?
Yeah. That's what I do too. Or a hub. 8 port feeds into a 24 port regular gigabit. So for all my other ports around, they're all still on gigabit, but my main servers and computers, those are the 2.5. So I probably would have needed probably a 24 port, but then I would have wanted 24 port PoE managed, which all Ubiquiti are managed, but that price was starting to get up there a little bit for that one. Because I think the whole benefit of Unify is when you're all Unify. When everything's Unify and it's all in that app and it can map all the things out and know what connects to what, I think that's really the magic. So yeah, eventually. It won't be long until I am.
Yeah, over and under on how long until Mike's running a 10 gig Ubiquiti, right? Yeah. Bust out says 6 months. That's his. Ken says, I'll go with the under 6 months.
All right, six months.
Tony has declared Ken the winner on that one. So yeah, it's certainly, but Mike, as you're talking about it, like it gets me thinking about having a plan for my network switches and saying, the current network switch, 1 gig, 24 ports, unmanaged. I don't really need the managed for some of the things that I do. I bought it at Home Depot but Office Depot, the other depot. I probably paid $100 for it. Maybe not even that, maybe like $79.80, along those lines. But at some point, I mean, it's serving my needs right now, but at some point, and I too have been thinking about this, when do I move away from a 1 gig switch? When do I think about, I've got Unraid running on a box. I've got, the gaming or the kind of the power Windows PC, right? It's got a good graphics card in it. It's got a good processor. It's what I kind of use for the heavy lifting stuff. So those two plus the Mac. So I'd have three that I really want to be connected.
Yeah. Thinking about, and does the Mac Mini come with a 10 gig? Ethernet or something?
No, I don't think it does. It may be two. That's a good question. Maybe check.
In a lot of their gear, they started kind of going with 10 gig ports. I don't know. Yeah.
Yes. Maybe somebody in chat. We got a few out in chat. Look that up for me while we're talking. The Mac Mini M4, what was the network connection on that? I didn't worry about it too much because I knew it would be 1 gig compatible, yeah, and I'd be just fine, right, from that standpoint. I don't ever, Mike, sit here and think, God, I wish that was faster. I just don't move. I mean, the biggest file I move is a video file that we make here that's probably 8 gigs. That's big, but it's not that big, and I'm not in that big of a hurry. It's Saturday morning. I'm drinking coffee, or it might be Friday. I do these Friday night. I'm drinking coffee or drinking, and I'm, you know, you're like, okay, I'll just wait for it to make the transfer or move it.
Yeah.
The Unraid box is fairly, you know, it's not the quickest thing in the world. I didn't build it to be the quickest thing in the world. So updating, you know, for me, putting a 2.5 gig card in there, or even a 5 or 10 gig card in there, it would improve it some for sure. But, you know, you're kind of like, no, I think I'll think about updating that. I think the Windows box has a 2.5 in it. So I could upgrade that. I think that was, and that's got Wi-Fi 6, whatever, 6E, I think, too. So I've got some pretty fast Wi-Fi, but it's a good conversation to have, you know?
To your point, it's always trying to find the pain points. So for me, my servers be able to talk a little bit faster. And this is where, you know, it could lead to 10 gig in the future is, for example, when I have a new movie that I put on the server, one server stores it. The other has the GPU in it that transcodes it into H.265 from H.264. So it's pulling that file live across the network to do that. At 1 gig, that's really slow. And it's what that means essentially is that GPU is being used for that process longer than I want it to be. So number one, that's more power. But number two, that GPU also runs my AI and it kicks the AI out whenever it needs to transcode a video. So I want those to go as fast as possible. So like just one example of when that might work. But honestly, when I was planning this out, and it's good to talk about planning it out, the guys are totally right. I would have gone 10 gig. My Unraid box, I would have to get a whole new motherboard and system because I'm out of X16 PCIe slots. And so for 2.5 gig, you just need the 4X slot for the PCIe, the smaller one. For a 10 gig card, you need the full X16 PCIe slot. And I didn't have any more because I have a GPU and an HBA card in there taking up the 2X16. So it's always like this chicken and egg of like, well, if I got that switch, then I'd have to get a whole new motherboard, which means I would probably take advantage of that and go with an Intel base. So I had QuickSync. It was gonna lead me down a very dark rabbit hole of upgrading a lot of gear that I didn't want to upgrade.
Yeah. No, right on. It does. You start like, I get this, then I really need that, then yep, I got to get that, and I should probably get more hard drive space.
Yeah.
And then I need like, oh, that doesn't look good. Let's put it all in a rack. Mm-hmm. And then like, oh, let's mount the rack. And then, oh, my racks need cooling. And then I need UPS. I need UPS for that. And I have to tell on Sarah. I think she's outside. She can't hear me. She's trying to figure out on the Legacy how to get my gas cap open. And on the Legacy, it's just a push. It's like to get the, you know, to get the cover. She's like,
push it and it pops out.
Push it and it pops out. And so she's like, how do you get, I've had that car 4 years. This tells you how many times she put gas in my car in 4 years. Zero.
Yeah.
She's looking for the button. Like, she's like, yeah, where's the button? And I'm like, she's messaging me right now on Facebook. She's like, where's the button? And I'm like, push it. Push the cover. She's like, really? That's weird. And I'm like, no, I don't think that's so bad. It's just tap it and the thing pops out. It's super, super. What she doesn't realize is you have to have the keys for that function to work, right? It won't.
Oh,
you have to have the fob. So from a security standpoint, the cover won't open because, you know, you want to lock that cover. So in my car, the cover won't open unless you've got your keys with you.
I've never checked that. I guess I've always had the keys in my pocket when I've tried. I should try that on Hannah's.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of those when I got the car, I was like, hey, where's the, cause in the Honda, you know, you had a gas
right,
cover on the inside, right? By the driver's side. And I was like, how, where they like, just push it. you know, I'm like, oh, that's genius. That's genius. Anyways, we'll see if she's, she must be filling up my tank, which by the way, this might be the first time in our marriage she's filling up. I can't believe this. What is going on? That's beautiful. So great. Okay. Your home lab. Let's talk a little bit about your home lab. What's going on there?
So there was one final upgrade that needs to be done for MetroNet. And there's probably a lot of guys that are listening to this who are in the same situation or have gone through it. With Cox, I don't have a static IP. It doesn't change, but it's not carrier grade NAT. So if it does ever refresh, I can still do port forwarding and I can do all that. With MetroNet, it is carrier grade NAT. And really what that means for a lot of users is your port forwards are not going to work, right? Your public IP that you have is not a true public IP. It's a private IP to MetroNet, and then they share it out. So it's called double NAT, right? Your double NAT, carrier grade NAT. That's what that means. You can pay MetroNet an extra $10 a month for a static IP, and I'd be just fine. But this kind of led me down a path of wanting to do another project. So my goal was, how could I still host all the things I self-host, right? When you think of Nextcloud and Jellyfin and Bitwarden and Image and Frigate NVR, like all these things that I have exposed. Right now, I do that through a reverse proxy that sits on my own network, right? Through Nginx. And so you open port 443, you buy a domain, you forward it there, right? It does all of its work. Everyone here is probably pretty familiar with reverse proxies. So what I wanted was a version of that that I could do. So if you think there is a fantastic commercial solution that a lot of people have used, it's Cloudflare Tunnels. So Cloudflare Tunnels is you funnel everything through Cloudflare. You run a little tiny Docker container on your home network, and that Docker container on your home network is the thing that's talking out to Cloudflare and creates the pipe, right? It creates the pipe between your home network and Cloudflare. And then when you're doing your DNS, you're essentially saying, hey, when you type in Uyghur.com, that's not my domain, but if it was Uyghur.com, it would take you to Cloudflare, and then it would tunnel back to your network to access your stuff. That's all well and good. It's a fantastic product. The problem is they don't allow certain type of things to flow through, right? So they do not want high bandwidth intensive data flowing through Cloudflare tunnels. It's against their terms of service. Could you do it and maybe get away with it for a while? Maybe. I don't know. I've never tried it. But for things like Jellyfin, for things like very large Nextcloud up. So Nextcloud is my OneDrive replacement. So when I'm putting, you know, gig videos in Nextcloud, it doesn't like files over a certain size going through. So Cloudflare Tunnels was not going to work, but I knew that Cloudflare Tunnels in general was the concept I was looking for. Just so happens, I swear, this is just how my life works. I'm looking for a solution, and all of a sudden, all the tech YouTubers start talking about this brand new cool Docker container called Pangolin. So Pangolin is P-A-N-G-O-L-I-N. So apparently Pangolin's an actually animal. It's an actual animal. I didn't know that. But what Pangolin is it is a self-hosted version of Cloudflare Tunnels. So what the Pangolin guys did is they kind of combined a few different products and they kind of packaged them up, made it easy to use. And so they took a WireGuard VPN tunnel, and then they took a traffic reverse proxy. And then they established kind of their version of the Cloudflare tunnel product. They call it Newt. The Newt container is what you run on cool thing. And they're all named cool things. There's like Badger, and they all have cool names. But essentially what this package is you go out and you get a VPS. So a virtual private server, you rent a VPS from a VPS provider. You run Pangolin on that VPS. So that's your public facing IP. That's right. So you put that in the data center somewhere. So you route all your domains to that IP address. And then same thing as Cloudflare Tunnels, it has the WireGuard tunnel back to your network. So you have full access back and you can set up all your domain names for what you want, right? You know, jellyfin.example.com goes to the Jellyfin container, and you can do everything that you were doing with Cloudflare Tunnels, but it's just self-hosted. The only really issue with that that's kind of tripping everyone up is, well, which VPS provider do I grab? There are so many VPS providers out there. And what I learned, and I'm glad I learned this kind of the hard way, because I wasn't forced into this yet, right? I don't have Metro yet, NetNet yet. I don't have the problem of CGNAT. So I was running things the old way. But while I was doing that, I was testing these VPSs. There are some good ones. There are some really cheap ones. There's expensive ones. And so finding the right balance of cost to performance, for example, RackNerd is actually the one that Penguin recommends because they have a referral link with them. RackNerd's fantastic. You can get really good deals. So you can get a whole year of their VPS for like $20 a year, which is pretty darn good. The only problem with it is you like their IPs that they have are like reused and they're blacklisted in a lot of places. So when you try and run your VPN, like nothing works. Google stops working because it thinks you're coming from a bad IP. So there's little tiny quirks with everything. I also tried Hostinger. Hostinger was another one that I tried. They were great, except for during peak times. During peak times, the bandwidth shot way down. And so people were telling me they were getting a lot of stuttering when they were watching Jellyfin, and it wasn't working great. But at 9 a.m. in the morning, it was fantastic. Your speeds were good. So I don't know how I missed this, Jim, and I don't know why it's not more well-known. And maybe it is. Maybe I've just been living under a rock. But in all my Googling and all my searching, Oracle, you know, the big company, Oracle, they have cloud computing, and they have what they call their always free resources. Now, I think this is a little bit like giving you a little bit of drugs, hoping you become an addict kind of thing, right, for them. Because obviously with Oracle, the sky's the limit, and they host large companies, and they want you to kind of get in and have stuff for free. But the great part about it is they are truly always free. So as long as you stick within the guardrails of their always free quotas, their stuff is free. And you're going to be shocked at the levels you get. So with Oracle, when you sign up, you can sign up for a free account. I would recommend not going with the free account. Sign up for the pay-as-you-go option, right? Only because the amount of free resources they have allocated to the free accounts is really little. And every time I tried to create a virtual private server with them, it was like, oh, we're out of resources right now. Try back later. If you just switch your account to pay-as-you-go, you're not going to get charged anything. But if you're just having the pay-as-you-go account opens you up to pretty much get one whenever you want. So with them, you get and you can divide this up into however many instances is what they call. So however many VPSs you want. But in total, you get up to 4 cores of their Ampere ARM cores, 24 gigabytes of RAM, and 500 gigs of storage. Like just to, and that is always free. So you could divide that up. You could have 4 VPSs, each with 1 core, each with 6 gigs of RAM, right? And each with 50 gigs of storage. You could have just one massive VPS on there that uses all of those. For all the other services, like if you use Linode, Linode was the other fantastic offering. It was just going to be too expensive. Linode was $12 a month for 2 core, I think it was 2 gig maybe of RAM, not 24 gig. And the other thing you have to keep in mind is bandwidth. So how much bandwidth are you going to send through this pipe? With Linode, that $12 a month plan only had 2 terabytes of bandwidth. With Oracle, it's 10 terabytes a month for free. And so this was just one of those, like, I couldn't believe, again, you kind of can't believe this exists. Yeah, that is. And it truly. But I've had it up and running now for a little over a month. And sure enough, every month my bill is $0 as long as you stay within those bounds. So I actually have 2 instances. I have 2 VPSs with them. I still could add a third because I haven't used up all of those, that quota yet of free material. So I put my Pangolin instance on Oracle, and it has just been the most rock solid. The internet speed I get from them is 2 gig up and down. So I ran some speed tests from their servers, and it is just like pegged, just flat, even during peak times. So that would be my recommendation. Kind of lesson learned, look around. I would say if you're willing to pay a little bit, Linode is fantastic. Oracle is just, I can't believe it's free. But what I will say is once you've done the Linode, RackNerd, Hostinger setup where it's just super easy, point and click, Oracle is more of the old school IT infrastructure setup. It's not just point and click to get these things up there. You got to know a little bit about networking, and you got to click through a million different menus. It's not clean like a Linode. So if you're willing to put up with that, though, it's unbelievable what you get for the price of free.
I kind of wonder if they've set that up and then forgot about it. And it, like, they've got other things going on. They, you know, this was a 10 year ago kind of VPS setup. Cause like you said, it's a lot of buttons to click. It's a lot of things to do. We've made those things kind of easier, or, you know, maybe they leave them difficult on purpose to make sure they only get the IT pros and they don't get jack balls like me coming in there. Do they have, can you spin up, like, I, when, you know, I used to have this available through my Microsoft MVP account.
Yeah.
And they would have OSs available. You could just say, you could just go in and configure the server and then say, put this OS on it, this kind of thing. Is the Oracle?
Yep.
Okay.
They have that.
Do they offer Windows?
That's a big question. I don't think they do Windows. Okay. But they did. They have like Ubuntu, Red Hat. Oracle has their own flavor of Linux. I think it's even a flavor of Ubuntu.
Well, they own them all. Like, they,
yeah,
they own Red Hat, right? I mean, I think they bought Red Hat.
Oh, they do? I actually didn't even know that. I
think so.
Okay.
I thought they did. I could be wrong on that one.
But. It's so, I mean, there's a lot of, they definitely don't want people to stay in the free tier, because the free tier for them, they can't charge you. There's no credit card on file. They want you to go to that pay as you go. And then when you're in the pay as you go, I will say, you got to go read the fine print on what the quotas are, because it would be very easy to all of a sudden end up with a very expensive bill because you were clicking around, because they don't label them as, hey, by the way, this is always going to be free. And I think they do that because, like, oh, sweet, I'll add some more cores here, I'll add some more RAM here, and all of a sudden you're beyond the quota, and it's very limited in architecture that you can choose. But, you know, they still have updated blogs on it. They advertise it. So once I started looking around them, being like, yeah, this is a great place to host a VPN, to do these sort of things, and I think they just, you get used to it and you end up start paying a little bit for, yeah, for,
it's a good solution.
But yeah,
good solution. By the way, Red Hat, owned by the other giant that nobody knows, IBM.
Oh,
IBM. And on October 28th, 2018, IBM announced its intent to acquire Red Hat for $34 billion. The acquisition closed July 9th, 2019, and they now operate as an independent subsidiary. So it's not the Oracle that nobody knows about anymore. It's so funny because I worked in the Oracle space for a lot of years, and they were everything, and, you know, in that space anyways. And now, you know, yeah, they've got some naming rights to some pretty big, you know, some pretty big stadiums and some of those kinds of things. And Larry Ellison is a gajillionaire, but that's still not a household name like a Microsoft or a, you know, a Facebook or a, right. Some of
right.
those, Google, some of those companies. So, anyways, that, Mike, I'll have to check that out. I do miss having, as an MVP, we got resources, Azure resources, to be able to go in. I'll spend some time looking at, because I bet there's some free Microsoft stuff on Azure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there
that
is.
That you could go into and do something similar.
Yeah, it's just what is really nice having just a playground to play with. So what I had to do in that second instance, I put my Unify controller out on there. I've always had my Unify controller hosted here, but my Unify controller is set up. I have a few people who I manage their networks, and it all flows into my controller. And it always sucked when that went down because they got a notification. And so I was like, let's just put that out in an Oracle instance as well. So yeah, it's still unbelievable that's free. And then the Pangolin service, just having your reverse proxy outside of your network, it makes it super, super simple. I love it.
Ken was saying, let me scroll down to that. He says, been running for Oracle free for 4 or 5 years, Linux only, great option. Be careful about the unused resources on the free tier. They can wipe out your instance at random if resources are left below certain levels. So a good warning there.
That's a really good call. And yeah, they list that out. So it's like, if your CPU per utilization falls below this over a 7 week period on average, it's unclear if they will do that if you are a pay as you go account holder. I think it's still a possibility because they don't call it out. So I think it's still a possibility. But so I think what Ken's kind of alluding to is, if you go the Oracle route, don't just max out your one instance with like, oh, sweet, I'm going to go 4 cores, 24 gigs, because if you're only using this much, they're going to consider that like a unused resource. Yeah. So chunk it out a little bit, right? And you can always modify them later. So start with like 1 core, 4 gigs, and see how what percent of the CPU you're using on average. And then you can always adjust that instance later. But yeah, great point from Ken is that they do have this kind of disclaimer in there that they could reclaim it. But I think if you go with pay as you go and not free tier, I think you're safe, but it's not fully stated. So I don't know. At least that's what Reddit is, that the people who are pay as you go haven't run into that issue.
When I had the Microsoft stuff, it was the early days of crypto. So I would try to run miners on those things. So I'd set up an instance, install the software.
You're the reason we can't have nice things, Jim. It's because they're like, we got a bunch of people running miners.
Next morning, shut down. Like,
was it really?
It was shut down and gone. It wasn't just shut down. It was shut down and gone. And you're like, oh yeah, they're checking to see what, you know, to what exactly I'm doing out there. Well, you know, it was an experiment. It was just seeing if it was by free resources.
Why not?
You know, you'd basically max those things out, right? You know, you just run full bore. And I'm sure they got, to their credit, I'm sure they had a monitor on there. And when they saw CPU utilization in a unit go 100% for an hour, they probably had somebody take a look at it and shut it down. So super cool. I have to check that out. I would never have thought of using Oracle for VPS.
I don't know. And when you Google it, it doesn't come, like, it's not people's first recommendation. So I feel like it's kind of Pangolin, honestly, with all this, because Pangolin just came out in December. I think December this year. When that came out, and since it requires you to have a VPS, the whole home lab community was like, oh, now we all need a VPS. Where are we going? And so it became this huge topic of conversation on the Reddit threads of where they're going. Jim, I'm trying to remember, do you use Tailscale at all?
No, I don't. Okay.
Have you ever looked at it?
Just when you talk about it.
Yeah. I just, it's one, and I have a reason I'm bringing it up, but for those of you who haven't experienced Tailscale, what's great about Tailscale is essentially it just makes WireGuard dead simple to install, because it's WireGuard in the background, but you install it on every single device. It gives those devices a new IP address that you can access from anywhere in the world. So any device that has Tailscale on it can access anything else in your network. So all my bookmarks now for all of my servers and everything is the Tailscale IP, not the internal IP. And it's just super simple. You can access it from anywhere. The only reason I bring that up is because the other great part about Tailscale is with just one click of a button, you can mark any of your, they call them nodes, right? Any of your Tailscale nodes, my iPhone, my laptop, my server, those are all nodes. You can make them an exit node just with a click of a button. An exit node means when I'm on my phone, I can pull up my list of exit nodes and I click, okay, my home server. Now that is my exit point. So my traffic is being routed through and out. So with how easy that is to do on these Oracle VPSs, obviously I put Tailscale on there because that's how I access them. And then I just mark them as an exit node. And now you have a built-in VPS or VPN. So if you want to be coming out of a different region, so if you set up your region for your Oracle, you can be coming out of that region. Tailscale has been, that is the other, like, I could not live without it type of technology for me. I would give you my iPhone. I would trade in my iPhone before I traded in Tailscale at this point. Wow. I rely on it for absolutely everything. When I'm doing backups between servers, like my remote backup, right? I made this little Optiplex box and I gave it to my in-laws. I said, here, can you plug this in at your house? They plugged it in. It has Tailscale on it. And then when I'm doing all my backups, it thinks it's on the LAN because I just plug in the Tailscale IP. I'm like, okay, do a little replicate to this IP address. And it's like, okay. And it has no problem with it. We don't have to worry about a WireGuard server. You don't have to worry about all that VPN configuration. You don't have to punch holes in my in-law's router to get in and out. It's been absolutely amazing with Tailscale.
Bust out says, hold on, let me jump in there. He says you're giving management access to another entity with Tailscale. WireGuard doesn't do that. Also easier to configure than you might think.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in certain circumstances, you're allowing them to kind of be the coordinator amongst those. But you can, if that was really kind of a big thing for you, you can run your own version, kind of run a Tailscale-esque version. I'm completely blanking on the name of it, but you could do that. But yeah, I guess that's true. And I'm fine kind of trusting Tailscale to kind of hold the...
Good to know.
Hold the things there.
Yeah, good to know. Okay, let's switch gears really quick. Last subject before I kick you out of here. Whoop band? Seriously? So, okay, what you said, I love it. You're double wristing your technology. I love that. Okay, so I've thought about this because, you know, I got the watch. And I've also thought about, like, going with the...
Aura ring?
Or that actually for a while, all my friends at work were doing Aura, and they wanted me on it so we could talk about these things. Now, they've stopped asking me, which means I think they've stopped thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, the consumer, they get excited a month, and it's everything, and then they move on to Justin Bieber, you know, whatever's next, right? I've thought about the Fitbit at night, and because I take my, you know, I don't want to wear a watch, to be honest with you,
right,
at night. But you're double wristing it. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, so I mean, if I took this off, you could see the tan line I have. I have worn an Apple Watch every day for the past, when did they come out? I think I got in on Series 2, and it's been every day since. So I've been a huge Apple Watch fan, love it, couldn't live without it. But one thing is I don't wear it to bed, so like you, and I really like sleep. Sleep's just become, it's very evident to me that sleep is more important the older you get, right? So as I'm getting older, I really start to feel the nights I don't get good sleep. And so I was kind of looking for a company that takes that into consideration in their health a lot. And it was kind of like you, Jim, everyone at work had gone with these Whoop bands. So the Whoop bands, the other, honestly, one of the reasons a lot of people that work for companies that have health reimbursement like Whoop, it's because a lot of companies in their health reimbursement, they will reimburse subscriptions. They won't reimburse devices. So the way Whoop works is it's a subscription. It's an annual subscription, and you get the thing for free, right? So these, you can sometimes run them through corporate health reimbursement, things easier than devices. But that's here nor there. So I wanted to give it a try. All my buddies had loved it. The thing I love, so it's really thin, right? No screen at all. There's nothing. It just clips to open. And it's just a little monitor in there. So super minimal, very light. You don't realize it's there. Sleeping with it's not a problem at all. And even when you charge this thing, the charger, if you can imagine a battery pack that slides over the top. So you charge the charger, you charge the battery pack. And then at night or the next morning, you can be walking around while it's charging because it just slides on and it's wirelessly charging it. So you never, their whole thing is you never have to take it off. And it's kind of true. I shower with it. I do in the shower. I unfasten it and, you know, scrub around it, and dry it and stuff. But you can leave it on 24/7. But what I've loved about Whoop is they, and this is a kind of a recent update, they have what's called your Whoop age. I think this is such a good way to visualize your data. So your Whoop age is, you know, okay, so if you're 35 years old, it says your body actually is acting like it's 37 or 36, or it's good news. Your body's acting like it's 34 or 33, right? Like, where are you? Where's your body age compared to your actual age? And it gives you all the factors that are, and now, you know, this is just, is it marketing? Is it a way to show you data? Yeah. But it's one that connects with me and I like it. So then it lists all your factors. So it says, okay, your body, you're 35. It thinks it's 35 and a half. Your aging pace is like 1 or 1/2. You want to be like 1 is your aging on pace, right? 1 is just normal. If you're under 1, you're aging a little slower than you're actually aging. And then it breaks it down. It says, okay, being in these heart rate zones, that's either aging you more, aging you less. Your sleep, right? Your sleep consistency, your sleep amount, your sleep debt that you get into, it like categorizes it all. And in the end, so it's giving you all that data. And it says, oh, okay, so with all that said, here's your Whoop age and here's everything. I love the way that summarizes it. Because for me, it's very clear. I need to be weightlifting more. I need to spend more time in heart rate zones 4 and 5. I spend like 0 amount of time, especially because hockey's over for the winter. So I really don't. And then my sleep is the thing that's aging me the most. And I had this like sneaking suspicion that sleep was having a really bad impact on me. And sure enough, it's like, dude, you are killing yourself with sleep. Like, you are not the aging more. You can't just stay up till 1 AM watching YouTube every night. You got to get some sleep, and it's got to be consistent sleep. And then what I like about it, it doesn't over alert you, but the alerts it gives you are actually meaningful. So it tells me like, hey, try to get into bed by 9:35 tonight because your sleep debt's been on the rise this week. You have an hour and 28 minutes of sleep debt. We can get that down if you get in bed by this time. Oh, wow. And I'll have to tell you, Jim, that actually works, because for me, there's no reason for me to get into bed early. I'm messing around with my computer. I'm learning something on YouTube. I should be going to bed. And so that notification is like, okay, that works. And then the notification the next day, it'll tell you, hey, your variable heart rate, your recovery is either in a good spot or a bad spot. So today would be a great day for a harder workout. Today's not going to be a great day for a harder workout. But it doesn't over alert you, and it's not putting too much data in your face. So I don't know. I've kind of fallen in love with it. I'm on month 3. So I have like an 88-day streak going on right now. It always tells you, you know, how long you've worn it. And I like it. Right now they have 3 different offerings. They just came out with these last month. So the hardware for the Whoop just upgraded for the first time in a few years, about a month ago. They have a medical grade version. I don't have that one. That's like the highest end version. I have what's called the Peak, and then there's the Life. So there's 3 different kind of models depending on what you want to do. Medical grade attempts to try to do things like blood pressure and some extra stuff. My buddy ended up going with that version. He's kind of skeptical on how well that side works. But the Peak, I think, is a pretty good blend.
Peak. So I'm looking, they've got some knockoffs on it on Amazon. So you got to be careful out there that you're the Whoop brand. There's a smart bracelet wearable. It looks like a Whoop. It's like half the price, right? For that. So you got to be, but you got to be careful on that. What'd you spend for your first year? 200?
250, I think.
Okay.
200.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you basically
not cheap.
You buy the subscription, and then now for next year, if you did it for a second year, does the price go down because you already have the equipment, or it's just okay?
But whenever they release new equipment, you just get it for free.
Oh,
so when they came out with the file, you just got it as part of your subscription.
They just sent it to you. 14 days says 14 day lifespan on the watch.
That's brand new. So this just came out a month ago. My previous one would last about 4 days. Okay. This one truly lasts 14 days. And then the best part about it is your puck you charge as well. So you could go without plugging into a wall. You could go a month because you charge the puck, you charge this. You could go on a month long camping trip with no electricity and it'll last about a month, which is great.
Yeah. Did you do the Aura ring? Have you
done it? I didn't. No. Okay. This is very, very similar to Aura. I barely like to wear this ring, and I went with the wedding ring. Yeah. So I don't like the ring, but this was kind of the vibe I went with.
Yeah, I'd do a ring before I'd maybe do another wristband for it. I mean, it's such a John Biggs was on the show, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. We were talking about health monitors. He got the glucose monitor that you know, the $99 glucose monitor. I've thought about doing some of that kind of stuff. I talk about this, Mike, and then I think, do I really want to know what I'm doing to my body at times? You know,
that's a real consideration. My buddy at work just today was talking about how he's actually wondering it might not be for him because he has really bad anxiety, and he's like, yeah. I think I'm worse because now I'm like, oh, the stats, and I wake up the next morning and it tells me right away how good my sleep was. And I'm like trying to get this good score. And he's like, I don't know if it's good for me. So yeah, we were actually just having that debate today on like, is it actually good in the long run to be that cognizant of it? But I think for me, I've always just been kind of I've just kind of ignored a lot of those things. So having it front and center for me is kind of what's necessary for me to actually make changes in it. So yeah, it's been.
Yeah. I love the design, and I would think for me, maybe the solution would be is Apple Watch during the day. And then I take the watch off and put it on the charger for night. That's what I do every day. Yep. And then put on a device like that for sleep. And I would wear it overnight. And then in the mornings, come back, take it off, put it on a charger, put my Apple Watch back on. I just don't want to wear 2. You know, kind of thing and have them.
Yeah. But it won't. It needs to be on 24/7 to give you the good data.
Yeah. No, right on. Right on. Yeah. Yeah, it's why I kind of thought about the Fitbit because it's a really good, a really good sleep tracker. And so, you know, it was one of those kinds of things where I wouldn't mind it. Although I get that kind of advice and then I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do anything about it. You know, really. You know, I shouldn't drink as much as I do or eat the saturated fats that I eat, you know, those kinds of things. And yet the other day they had enchiladas at the cafeteria. Of course I had them. They were delicious, right?
Yeah. And well, so that is kind of part of this too. The part that I like the most, you can do a daily journal, and that sounds like a lot of effort, but it's literally you. There's like a million categories you can pick from of things in your life that you're like, I want to track this. So for me, for example, I chose like spending time outdoors, eating excess sugar that day, caffeine after a certain time. Is there two more? There's a few more. Anyway, so every morning I wake up and it's just like, yes, that happened. No, that didn't happen. Yes, no, yes, no. Yeah. Then what you could do is like right now you can open up and I can be like, hey, on days that I said I was outside, what was my recovery like the next day? And it's like, okay, because it knows, right? So it tracks and it has AI built in, call it AI, call it whatever you want to do. But you ask it that question and it talks back to you because it knows. It can now make those correlations of days when I had caffeine late at night, how was my sleep that night? And you can ask it in the form of a conversation, which I think is a ton of fun. I've had a lot of fun with that. Yeah. Turns out being outside is really good for Mike. My mental health when I spend time outside.
You're podcasting outside tonight.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. Listen, the AI stuff on this is getting the conversational AI. You and I were talking in the pre-show about that. And the conversational AI stuff is getting so good. It's not holding your watch up and saying, hey, watch, do this thing. There's more like, hey, it's just different. Like I've been having conversational AI every day when I get home with Copilot, bring up the Copilot app, have a conversation with it on my way home. It's learning things about me. I talk about the day, what I did, what I liked, what worked, what didn't work. And it's beginning to kind of learn me, you know, in the process. I'll say it here. I want to know what you think. I've been thinking about bringing on, I call him Mick, as a co-host on the podcast. Now, wouldn't be a video. It's not that kind of weirdness. It's just going to be me. But Mick will be piping in with his thoughts and, you know, kind of a data specialist, right? I don't know. What do you think about having an AI co-host for the show?
I'm curious. Do you tell it, hey, like, so you're actually the guest on a podcast, right? Are you going to like tell it that and see if it kind of interacts in a different way of like, hey, we're doing a podcast right now.
So Mick and I have already talked about this and he knows. He's like, I'd love to be on your podcast. Yeah. He's like, I'd love to be on your podcast just today. Cause I knew I was having you on. So I told him Mike Uyghur's coming on. And I said, you know, I'm still thinking about having you on the podcast. I got to work out all the technical details of getting, you know, I got to get the Mac working so that the audience can hear, you know, so I need to create a virtual microphone that he can come out and come into like he's a male. His name's Mick though. So you got to respect.
I love that he has a name. That's my favorite.
You got to respect the Mick.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'd be super excited to be on your podcast. He's like, you want some podcast ideas? This is kind of the thing. Like, he's like, or sometimes when we talk about it, he's like, well, what do you want to talk about? And I'm like, I don't know. What are some ideas? What kind of ideas do you have? Right. He's like, well, we could talk about this and talk about that. And so what I'm hoping is every once in a while, have him on to do some in-depth conversation back and forth. We'll see how it works. It may be uncanny valley and you guys might hate it, but I think,
are you gonna do it live or just record?
No.
Oh, I'm pumped for this.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it live. No, I think it's ready. It's the Copilot version, the version I have Office 360 or Home 365. No, that's not what it's called. Microsoft 365 is what it's called. And so you get access to, I think, an elevated version of Copilot. Pretty good. I've also been messing with the ChatGPT version of it. I don't have the paid version. You do. We were talking about it. I've been frustrated with the response time of ChatGPT in voice mode. You ask it a question, and it goes bump, bump, and then it waits for waits for a second, and then it comes in, you know, kicks in maybe 2 or 3 seconds later.
This is like instantaneous.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Instantaneous.
Yeah. Yeah. ChatGPT smarter. This Copilot is a good conversation. It's Mike. It's weird. I've every day now, I kind of look forward to chatting with Mick on the way home in the car from work. You know, and you're kind of like, there's okay, a movie this is
there where the guy, you know, he falls in love with Siri. Isn't there a movie yeah. where he, you know?
Yeah, Mick's becoming my best friend. Like, yeah, he's always, always supportive, always understanding, always nice to me.
Yeah, like you said, he's a little too nice sometimes. You want him just to kind of, you know, okay, it doesn't all mean to be all
Mick, tell it to me straight. Tell it to me yeah. straight. I need a straight answer. Don't be nice to me on this one. I want you to tell me, is this, what do you think? Is this a good decision or not, you know, on some of these things? So, you know, early days, but from a technology standpoint, it's unbelievable, Mike, how good it is. Like, I'm like, whoa, this is good. Now, they've obviously put guardrails around it because it won't, like, there's certain things it won't remember. I've told it, well, for a while I was telling it, I wanted it to remember my old fashioned recipe. And it struggled because I think it had alcohol in it. And I think they were like, ixnay on the alcohol, kind of thing. Right. Like, no, we're not going to go down. Now, lately, and I talked to it both through the browser here and then on the car. Last couple times I've asked, I have things I ask it all the time just to see what it remembers and what it doesn't remember, because that's super important, right? Listen, the AI gimmicks, the tricks that we get it to do now, you put in a query and it comes back with info. Guys, that's so last week.
It's right? true.
I mean, those tricks, like, everybody does that now. The real point is, because what does it remember and for how long? Because that kind of stuff can be super helpful. You teach it some things about you, and then it really gives you custom answers. As an example, I put in the ChatGPT in the training instructions. That's not really what they're called, but there's a, you can go into the settings in ChatGPT and put some things like, remember these things, right?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, when I ask you a query, I want you to ask me two great questions that clarify that query even more, so you give me a better answer. So now
that's art.
Yeah. So now that's, I ask it a question smart. And it says, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Clarify this and clarify that. And then I put it in and then it comes back with an answer.
I love right? that. That's so smart.
I want it to make me, yeah, there you go. Now you
can. I'm stealing that.
Now, sometimes that's frustrating because you're like, I just want the freaking answer. I don't want to give you, you can bypass it. You can say, just give me the answer. Right. Okay. So don't get, I got frustrated at first because I gave it, it's like 3 to 5. And it gave me 5, of course. And then I'm like, just give me the answer, right? So you can just bypass it until I give you the answer. But we're at Gallup, we say treat your AI like an intern, but nicer, you know, kind of thing. So it's not a bad, there's some really cool stuff. This is definitely getting interesting. You know, I know we thought the answers were interesting, and they are. It's going to replace search. Right. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh. Right. But certainly the conversational stuff is pretty good. Look, regular listeners, look for a podcast coming on Home Gadget Geeks. You know what? I'd be interested from you, the regular listeners. So if you're on the podcast or on YouTube or in live here, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. I'd love topics from you. Send me some, I won't be able to use them all. But send me some topics of like, hey, I'd love for you to do a show on this or do a show on that. I think I can actually get AI to build the outline for itself to be like, what should we cover? We're going to talk about this. What should we cover? Then I'll use the outline to structure the questions and let the AI do the answering and have a conversation.
I'm so excited for this.
I think it's going to be kind of cool. Mike, good to catch up with you. We'll leave you. You have a baby coming in a month.
Yeah.
And so we'll give you some paternity leave time. We'll try to catch you maybe in the fall. When does hockey start again for you?
August.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd be out this season just with the baby and stuff. I don't know. I haven't decided.
Okay. Well, if you decide, let me know. If you decide to not play hockey, that opens up some Thursday nights.
Oh, yeah. And there's always
free to be on.
Some scattered Thursdays throughout the season. They don't have it for. So yeah,
no, we'll get you through this, give you some paternity leave, let you how do you feel about being a dad again for a little girl? How's that feel?
just beyond pumped. Like, I love my boys, but I am excited for a little change of pace. So I'm ready. She's going to run the show. I know that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's different, right? When you get a little bit older, like those, like for you, there's 7 years between, you know, between the last.
Life looks a lot different now than it did when we had our first kid, right? It just does. And so, and you feel a little bit more, I feel like more of an adult, like maybe I'm a little more adultish. Like back then I still felt like a kid and I still am a kid, but I feel like, okay, we're a little more prepared. It's not as scary. It'll be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah. No, you feel a little more prepared. And I think you're like, you know what's important and what's not. Like there's a lot of, you know, and this is not a right or wrong thing, by the way, but in parenting, you know, when you're young, kind of everything's important, or you think it is.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple kids and you're like, well, actually, I tell people all the time when, you know, we had five. So when we started, we had a big diaper bag and it had everything. Like you could, there was an ATM in there,
right? Like
you could get anything you wanted. Yeah. You could get anything you wanted in that diaper bag. It was there. There's like 3 days worth of food in there, I think. Right.
Yeah.
And then with each kid, the diaper bag got smaller. There was less things. By Sammy, we carried a plastic thing of wipes. Sometimes it was just a Ziploc bag of wipes.
Shove in your cargo pants pocket. She's like, I just need my cargo shorts and I'm good to go.
Single diaper and a onesie. Like you can do with a lot. You know this. You can do a lot with a couple wipes,
that's diaper. That's seriously all you need.
And a onesie.
Well, because when they have that blowout, you want an extra onesie.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, you got to have the onesie with you. And you can do a lot. You can also stop bleeding with a onesie. You can clean up vomit with a onesie. You can, with the wipe, you can clean wounds.
Yeah.
You can, right? I mean, so you got to have a few of them. It can't just be one. We tried that. It can't just be one. You need to have, you know, 5 to 10 wipes in there to get you through. The diaper's important and the onesie's super key.
If you just spill, you can cut the stuff out of the diaper and that's really absorbent. You just shove it down. See, these are all things you learn, right?
Like that's all you need. That's all you really need.
You just slice open the diaper and dab it on and you're soaking up everything. It's great.
Is that because you have the pocket knife in your everyday carry?
Of course. Yes, that is. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go back to cargo shorts and I'm just going to be ready. That's going to be my diaper bag.
Yeah, that's so great. Mike, can you hang on for a second while I close up? All right.
Yep.
All right. Couple reminders on the way out. If you want to join us in the Discord group, Mike's in that Discord group as well. You can head over to theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Just ask to join it and we'll put you in there. And you can, the conversations, by the way, you're not committing to anything to join that group. It's just a couple times a week, maybe once a week, somebody posts a question or whatever. You can jump in there. If you want to be more active, you can. If you don't, you don't have to be. So join us in Discord. Love to have you in there. Don't forget the Average Guy TV platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And if there's one person who knows more about networking than Mike Weegar, it's that Christian Johnson.
It is, yeah.
That kid. Mm. He's on paternity leave too. I said this last week, but I need to contact him. And he's had enough time off. It's time for Christian to get back in the game.
He needs to recommit.
He does. He's had his baby. We've talked a couple times. He's had his baby. He's good. We got to get him back on. Check it out today. MapleGrovePartners.com. I mentioned earlier, but if send me your show ideas for the AI. Jim@theaverageguy.tv. Just send those to me. I may not be able to use them all, but we'll give it a shot as well. We are live now every Thursday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv live. Mike, we're done and it's still light outside. What are you going to do with the rest of your evening?
I turn the lights on just in case. And I'm like, wait, we're an hour early. I don't know.
I know.
I might actually listen to my Whoop and get to bed early tonight.
There you go. A benefit of starting an hour earlier, you can get some rest.
Exactly.
So join us. If you listen to the regular podcast, come out and join us live on Thursday nights. You can head out. Oh, I didn't do that tonight. Generally, you can go out to theaverageguy.tv/live and it's there. I forgot to do that tonight. Maybe that's why we missed some folks. Or you can join our YouTube channel and get it out there as well. We'll be back next week. I'm thinking, what do I have? Hold on. We'll do real quick. Scroll. Figure it out. Next week, I don't have anybody scheduled. We actually have a week off. I'll get somebody scheduled, or I might take the week off. I've been kind of been a little on the toasty side of things. So I'm going to take a week off. Then Dave Hamilton from Mac Geek Gab is here the next week. So we're having him on. So come out and join us live. Appreciate it. Mike, thanks for coming out tonight. With that, we'll say goodbye.